From inside Camp Randall Stadium, Learfield IMG College presents Behind the Badgers, an exclusive look inside Wisconsin athletics. Here are your hosts, Patrick Herb and Brian Mason.
Brian, it has been quite a year this last week, hasn't it?
Has it only been a week?
So Behind the Badgers is back, though. We are here to recap everything that's happening in Wisconsin athletics. I'm Patrick Herb. Brian Mason is with me, and thanks for checking us out. Our irregularly scheduled podcast at this point. It's coming to you on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, so thanks for finding us whenever you do. Today we're coming to you on Thursday because I was in Minneapolis last night with the men's basketball team. We'll get to that in a moment. But today we got a great guest, really peeling back the curtain a little bit on how things happen in Wisconsin football. We have Saeed Khalif, Wisconsin's Director of Player Personnel for the football program here. And this is on the heels of signing day, which by all accounts was one of the best we've ever had.
The best by the numbers. 20 kids in the scholarship class, ranks 25th in the country, and that's the highest ranking the Badgers have ever had.
So Saeed, spend some time with us to talk about recruiting philosophy that Wisconsin has. What are they looking for? How do they identify all these developmental kids that turn out to be first round draft picks and NFL pro bowlers? And then he goes through and gives us the lowdown on and scouting report on some of these guys that they have inked for, some of the guys that are already on campus and what this 2020 class looks like, and gives us a couple dark horses that I'm excited to then now like follow up in a couple of years from now and say, well, was he right or not? Because we all know it's an inexact science at this point, but Saeed gives us a lot of insight on that. So stick around for that conversation with Saeed Khalif. Brian, let's get into trending topics. Let's start with this last week for Wisconsin basketball. A lot has happened since we did a last podcast.
And I think it's been an interesting week. And it's also been sort of emblematic from a results standpoint of what we've seen with this Wisconsin team all year and what we've seen within the Big Ten, with having a big win against Michigan State at the Kohl Center on Saturday and then not being able to sustain that momentum going on the road to Minneapolis and never really being in that one last night. But
Let's go back. Let's start by going back to what has happened since we last recorded a podcast. So it's been quite a bit. Kobe King, sophomore guard, announced his intentions to leave the team. That came out officially last Wednesday. The same evening, Brad Davison was issued a one-game suspension by the Big Ten League office, so he sat out the Michigan State game. Wisconsin then played Saturday and arguably played their best game of the season, or one of their best games of the season, and recorded a huge win over ranked Michigan State team, snapped a big losing streak against that team, really showed some guts, you know, rallying around their coach, their program, the team, everything, and kind of proving, you know, maybe that this team has some guts and they have talent to match that too, that they can really dominate a Michigan State team for a large portion of that game. Then they go on the road to Minnesota and get behind big early and can't recover, something that we've seen happen a few times this season.
Yeah, and it goes back to that idea that, you know, we talked about on here in previous weeks about the home road split and how hard it is to win on the road in this league is unbelievable to me. I mean, there are these outliers, right? Like Penn State goes and wins at Michigan State in convincing fashion. But otherwise,
that same Penn State team has a 32-point loss at Ohio State on their resume.
Right, and you're looking at Michigan State has a 29-point road loss, you know, to Purdue, which then last night goes and, I mean, absolutely waxes Iowa.
By 36.
Yeah.
I went and looked at it. So the top six teams in the standings as of today are Maryland, Iowa, Michigan State, Penn State, Illinois, and Rutgers. They all have at least three or four losses. All of those teams have a lopsided loss on the road, at least one. Some have multiple. Maryland lost by 18 at Iowa. Iowa by 36 at Purdue. Michigan State by 29 at Purdue. Penn State by 32 at Ohio State. Illinois by 20 at Michigan State. Rutgers has a pair of double-digit losses on the road already this season. So what Wisconsin did on last night against Minnesota is not anything that you want to repeat if you can help it, but it's also not out of character for the league.
And trying to predict future results off of what has happened in the previous games that hasn't been any kind of indicator. So who knows what we're going to see on Sunday.
I've heard Greg Gard say it a few times that he said if consistency were a city, the population would be zero, just because it's such a hard thing to maintain. Or maybe you said consistency, would the population would be small or whatever, but this year more so than ever. He said in postgame last night that he's been in this coaching in this league for almost 20 years and he's never seen it like this, that the depth of it. And he attributed the home and road splits a lot to that there are no off nights. And I know that Northwestern and Purdue are certainly at the bottom of the league, but Nebraska beat Iowa at home this year. And so, but let's say even if there's two teams that are maybe the outlier, that means you've got 12 teams that are a pick 'em almost every night.
Yeah, and you look at Wisconsin, sitting right now at 500 in the league. That should be average, right? And this is a Wisconsin team that anybody in this league would say is capable of winning pretty much any night, or capable of having a game like happened at Minnesota last night.
Right, so here they are. So they're in the middle of the pack, but they are only a couple games out of first place, and they're only a couple games out of playing on Wednesday in the Big Ten tournament. Right. So they're like, it's, I have no idea what's going to happen the rest of the season from a league standpoint. We've talked about it on here. Like, how many losses will win the Big Ten?
Yeah, five. Five is very much in play. Five-loss Big Ten champion.
Six might be in play, which is unprecedented. It's never happened. So it's a curious season from a lot of standpoints. There's a couple of things. If we want to talk about some specifics and maybe what has happened with this team. So Kobe King leaving the team changes a bunch of roles on the team. Clearly some roles were changed further when Davison didn't play against Michigan State. There's a few things that I think Demetric Trice his play has steadied, and that's been a real positive sign for them over the last three games. And it's not just a scoring standpoint. His rebounding numbers have been actually really impressive. But maybe more important, his assist-to-turnover ratio in the last three games, 6-1, 5-1, 6-2 against Minnesota. So that's a really healthy number, and it's a big reason why Wisconsin's turnovers overall have gone down. Now, clearly that can't be the only thing that you need to improve. There's other issues, but that's a big one. We've also talked about, or at least I have mentioned, that I thought that guys like Aleem Ford was a dark horse this season. What can he bring? So he went through an 8-game stretch where he didn't score in double figures. Now these last two, he has.
He's both surged, the last two.
Yeah, so
You're getting contributions from Brevin Pritzel off the bench. I mean, against Minnesota, I thought Micah Potter was a huge bright spot with his play on both ends of the floor.
15 rebounds in that one, 5 offensive. And his minutes the last two games have been up 22 against Michigan State and 20, so the coaching staff's probably getting a better sense on how to use him. And look, we're not trying to mask where this team is, but the other thing that you need to consider is the resume that they're building. While it's inconsistent and all over the map a little bit on some things,
right? But we've already established that is sort of the case for everybody right now.
They have strong metrics because they have strong wins. They have 6 wins in the quadrant one of the net rankings, and they have beaten 5 of the top 25 teams in the net. So when you stack that up against nationally, there's only a handful of teams that have more, and they have the best wins of any team in the Big Ten.
And that's why a team that is sitting here at, what are they, 13-10
yep,
right now, can be a single digit, or projected as a single digit NCAA tournament seed.
So up next, they play Ohio State now on Sunday. So they need to, again, keep this yo-yo going. So they played well against Michigan State at home, then dipped down against Minnesota, find it to come back, get some Kohl Center magic, capitalize on a hopefully a great home crowd on a Sunday at noon on CBS, and beat an Ohio State team who we'll be looking to punch back, because Ohio State went to Columbus right around just after New Year's and beat then number 5 Ohio State and kind of sent them into a little tailspin at the time.
Which was, we just talked about the Michigan State win being perhaps Wisconsin's best win.
Yeah.
At the time, that Ohio State win was huge.
Yep, and then in that game, they jumped on them and played great defensively and really limited what Ohio State was able to do offensively. So we'll see what happens on Sunday, but that's the next step. Got to protect the home court, right? That will be very big for Wisconsin moving forward, you would think.
So trending topic number 2, also looking ahead to Sunday's game, the 2000 Final Four team will be back for a reunion.
Yeah, I'm jacked.
What should people be looking for out of this get together?
Well, let me preface this by saying that this was in my formative years of following Wisconsin basketball. I was in college at the time, so this is my wheelhouse. These were my classmates that I didn't necessarily know them, but I was a season ticket holder for a couple of years before I got an internship, and that run was one of those ones that I will never forget. And personally, I remember being in my apartment in State Street watching their game against Purdue, and then going celebrating with my buddies and my roommates in our apartment, and then looking down onto State Street and watching thousands of people flood onto State Street from all directions to celebrate this unfathomable.
Right. Improbable was the word I was going to use, but unfathomable was probably more
accurate. It was not a dream. I mean, it was like, hey, cool, we're in the tournament. And so I remember watching that, and then I remember message getting out, and now I don't even know how that got out at the time. There was no Twitter or social media, so somehow message spread that the team was going to be coming back at like 1 a.m, and they're opening up Camp Randall Stadium to welcome the team back for like a pep rally, and running down there at whatever state that we were in at 1 a.m.
and celebratory.
Yeah. And I remember I was sitting on my roommate's shoulders in the stands, acting like a goon, celebrating this team coming back. They drove the bus onto the field and got out, and Dick Bennett gave this speech, and Dwayne, I remember giving this speech, and it was so I'm really excited. And I think there's a lot of people like me that share that as like, that was a seminal moment that sort of paved the way to what the program was able to accomplish the next 20 years.
Definitely. So when I think of that team, the first name I think of is Mike Kelly. For you, who jumps off the page like, oh, that's my guy?
Yeah, Mike Kelly probably. Well, Dick Bennett too. Like, he's got a, you know, sure. He's revered in my head. Yeah, John Bryan is another one too, that he captured some magic in that tournament, and his 3-point shooting was a huge reason that they were able to do what they did. Trevon Davis too, like in my mind, is like kind of this, like, maybe it's because he was short and I'm short, or is short, but he's got a special place in my heart too. But anyway, so this weekend, they're coming back. Huge turnout for it. It's going to be awesome. Coach Bennett is going to be there along with a lot of the big contributors from that team. Roy Boone, John Bryant, Trevon Davis, Mike Kelly, Andy Kowski, Mark Versha, Charlie Wills, a lot of the big names from that team. And they're making a full weekend out of it. They're going to be at practice with this year's team on Saturday. They're going to have an outing gathering for them to get together and share stories Saturday night. Sunday, they're going to be honored at halftime with a really neat presentation that Wisconsin's marketing staff has planned. And another thing that I'm looking forward to, if people are going to the game, I have a public service announcement for you that we want to really stress. So the team has this idea of giving a tribute to Dick Bennett at this game, that 2000 team. So during that era, there was a tradition at the Fieldhouse and then at the Kohl Center of the crowd standing at the opening tip-off and remaining standing until the other team scored. Not a revolutionary thing, but that was Wisconsin's tradition. And that team could defend. And so there were some games where you'd be standing until the first media timeout. I mean, that happened. It might only be 2-0, but the other team hadn't scored in the first 5 minutes. And so what a great tribute to Dick Bennett if we can resuscitate that tradition on Sunday. So if you are going to the game and you're listening to this, stand up at the opening tip-off and let's remain standing until the other team scores. Hopefully, it'll take a while. Hopefully, Wisconsin will respond and get some stops on defense, but really get some juice in that building. And what a cool way to give a tribute to Dick Bennett.
That'll be awesome. So we're going to look back in time, but with trending topic number 3, let's look ahead to the future and the signing class of 2020 that the Badgers wrapped up on Wednesday. One signing to conclude the class, the 4-star running back out of New Jersey.
It's a big one.
Jalen Berger. It's a big one. And that put the cap on what is a 25th ranked class for the Badgers nationally, which is the highest they've ever had.
So Saeed's going to go through some of these names in particular, so we don't need to go through all of them right here. But as you look at this class, it seems that it's diverse in terms of geographic, where they're recruiting from, that this is a coast-to-coast recruiting class.
For sure.
It's diverse in terms of the positions that they're getting and the types of athletes that they're bringing in for this class. And it seems like it fits a lot of the needs that of guys who will be moving on in a year or two, or when this the class kind of transitions into their time. It seems like it fits that a lot.
Yeah, and there may even be some opportunity for guys in this class to make an immediate impact this year. You look at outside linebacker. The Badgers have to do some replacing there with Zach Bond moving on, and you've got a couple of linebackers, especially with Nick Herbig, the 4-star, and Caden Johnson, the other 4-star, at that position. So there are chances for guys to come in and make an impact. Now, the 5-0 linemen in this class, as good as they are, you're not going to come in and have a freshman, you know, playing on the O-line. But there are guys in this group, whether it's Jalen Berger or those outside linebackers, that could make an impact already this fall.
Well, let's get it straight from the source. The architect, if you will, of Wisconsin's 2020 class, Wisconsin's Director of Player Personnel for the football program, Saeed Khalif. Saeed, been a busy time for you, but I think the first thing we need to say is congratulations, because you're now stacking two really good recruiting classes. Some say the best in Wisconsin history in back-to-back years. So do you get to take a little break now that signing day is behind you?
No.
That was a rhetorical question.
And the congratulations goes to all of us. Obviously, the coaches are making the relationships and hitting the road and away from their families. So I'll accept that for all of us.
There you go. Yeah, speak on behalf of them. I think we need to pause for a moment and let people acknowledge the fact that that voice that they're hearing might be familiar to them. If you followed Wisconsin football on social media and saw some of the trailer videos that Wisconsin posted throughout this last season, you may recognize Saeed's voice. He was the hired help for some of those videos. And now you can see, you could tell why, because he's got the pipes. These microphones make you and I sound maybe not like 12-year-old boys.
Yeah.
A little bit better.
He doesn't need
it. He doesn't even need this. You have fun doing that? Do you like doing that?
It's a lot of fun. All I do is read, though.
So. There's some acting involved, though. Even though you're not on camera, there's some acting.
But some good work goes into scripting that stuff and being able to talk about it. And it's kind of fun to hear it later on, because I don't know where it's going or what it's attached to. So when I hear it later, I go, wow, that was me. Pretty cool.
All right, so back to your day job. What do you view the significance overall, taking a big picture look at this class that we just wrapped up here?
One of the biggest things was adding pieces. Obviously, every year we're going to lose guys. We've had some great guys come through here, and trying to replicate the success by putting people in here that match is a challenge. My first year, you come in, you look, and you're just trying to grab the best kids in the country on paper, but they don't automatically match. Right. They don't fit. So learning the culture and being able to match the culture and the kid, because this is a hard work environment. You got to be willing to come in and put in work.
So let's go there right away. Let's because we hear that word fit a lot. And Wisconsin's not the only program that looks for the right fit. But we hear it a lot here, because this program may not be for everyone. And though, so there's a certain profile of kids that you guys are looking for. I've heard some of the language used about what you're going after. How would you describe that? If you had to say, hey, we got a factory here and we're going to build the perfect Badger, what are the things you're looking for?
Well, the mantra is smart, tough, and dependable. But tough is probably the first word. We got to make sure they have the toughness, the willingness to grind through training to get better, grind through having to deal with school and practice, training and working out, and still football is first when it comes down to can you play the game. But are you willing to put in those other things that make it, to make you ready to be coached? Not all kids take difficult coaching. So we coach pretty hard. We will grind them. We're going to put them to work. We're going to put them through their challenges so that they're ready on game day. It becomes the easier part of the process for them.
So how do you figure that part of it out? Because you can measure how tall they are. You can see their speed. You can see what kind of player they are on the field on their film. How do you figure out that fit part? That seems to be the wild card.
Part of it you can see on film based on, you can watch a guy finish a play from whistle to whistle. You hear a lot of people say that. The other part of that is you got to talk to the people around them. That's where the relationships with the coaches come in. You want people to tell you the truth. Will he go to school? We can look at attendance records to tell whether it's a tardiness or an attendance issue. Is he missing practices and workouts and things of that nature? Those are the questions you want the real answers to. You better off asking his teammates and other people around him more than their coach, really. You can find out a lot about him by talking to the other people in the building.
I thought Logan Brown had some interesting comments when he decided to come here about the way Joe Rudolph recruited him, a kid out of Michigan. And the people around Logan Brown said that Joe Rudolph talked to more people than they had ever seen. I mean, you know that story, don't you? Can you kind of share with us what Joe Rudolph did and what all of our coaches probably do and then what the response was?
Sure. Joe is a seasoned vet. He's one of the best. He's going to turn over every rock. He's going to go in every school building. He's going to make a confidant out of a lot of people around him. So when Logan's story was, Joe put him on a plan. He said, this is the plan you have to follow in order to go along the path that you want to go on. And to Logan's credit, Logan stuck to it. But Joe was very diligent about making sure the people around him had signed up for that same plan as well. So between the counselors, the people at the school, the dietitian in the cafeteria, because Logan is a diabetic. I don't know if I could say that, but we had to know those kind of things about him so that, you know, when he has sugar crashes and things like that, we know what it is. It's not that a kid is just trying to tap out. He's really had a condition that we had to be mindful of. All the way down to his sister. His sister was very instrumental in understanding what resources were available to him for real versus a lot of us say a lot of things in recruiting, but she was peeling that onion back saying, okay, how do you handle a person with this special situation and where's the proof of doing it in the past? And we had those things. And Joe actually had examples of guys who played for him that he was able to make sure got the treatments they needed and the dietary supplements and those kind of things taken care of. So Joe was a real pro in handling that situation.
So the importance of going into the school, meeting people beyond the high school coach, because I think that's what people assume with recruiting. You talk to the kid, you talk to his coach, check the box, you move on. So that's important for you guys to dig a lot deeper than that. But those contact days where the coaches are in the schools is a pretty small percentage of the calendar. So in terms of building relationships and communicating with these guys, how does the rest of the year play out? And what do you, how do you guys handle that?
A lot of ingenuity. part of our role in the recruiting department is we stay in touch with the kids probably all year, a lot more than the coaches do. Come season, our coaches have a very regimented schedule about preparing the current players to play in games. Our job is, as we're building the classes, communicating with kids, and we don't talk to them about football. After we've identified a kid as one that we want to recruit, it's up to us to find out the other things about them. Girlfriends, who are they hanging out with? We're scraping social media pages. We're having conversations with them about what they like and what they don't like. And they're having conversations. We become part of their fabric. We're part of their weekly and monthly communication. So we're tracking them on those basis. So we'll have notes and tidbits that we can add to what a coach can get when he goes on the road, ask more questions about. So we try to have more detail for them so when they show up, they have a lot of the answers. They're just confirming the information.
I think I know the answer to this, but maybe you can confirm it, that you never have to stop. You can never stop recruiting a kid. Is that right? I mean, even when they get to campus and they're on the team, you got to, it seems like you got to keep recruiting them even when they're on the team. But particularly signing day is important.
Sure.
But that, to the communication that you're talking about, that's probably invaluable. And that's one of your biggest roles, isn't it? You are physically calling these kids and talking to them and staying in touch with their families.
Absolutely. I'm texting, direct messaging them to call me. So
okay, sure.
The coaches get to make the calls based on NCAA rules.
Yeah, okay.
Coaches get the calls at certain time frames. But we can communicate with them through text and direct message all year long. And as long as they call you back, you can receive their phone call. So the way we determine how a kid is real, in quotes, is their willingness to respond to you when requested. So if I tell a kid, hey, I want to talk to you every Tuesday, you're my afternoon conversation. And they have to have a willingness to make that part of their routine. What happens is, you know, you got one when they're apologizing for missing the call. The challenge is when they don't care, or you're reminding them, hey, I didn't hear from you, and then you don't hear anything from them. You can start getting indications that that kid is going in another direction. But if you're important to them and you become part of their fabric, then that routine is, hey, coach, I'm sorry, I had a basketball game or practice or mom made me do this or that. Then you know you got a kid who's genuinely interested and has a genuine desire to be a Badger.
So with DMs, we talking Instagram, Twitter?
Direct message on Twitter.
Twitter,
I'm
that's
not
where the kids.
Instagram. Guy.
Okay.
So all this communication, two-way street. I think a lot of the feedback that we see publicly from kids after they come on visits or they get to know you guys is there's an honesty and an authenticity to what is often called a pitch, the recruiting pitch here. Why is that important and how does that factor into your approach?
You know, it's said best by some of the kids we asked to host. They say, our job is not to recruit you. Our job is to tell you the truth. So the authenticity actually starts in the locker room. We're asking current players to engage recruits to come be part of their team. And the ones who have a good feeling and there's a good essence about being here are more genuine about telling their story. The ones with sour grapes, which are few and far between, you'll have a handful, but our culture is so strong that it kind of chokes out that bad weed. It allows us to get a better feel for who that kid really is away from the adult. So when we're here, we're going to bring them in the cold. Some of our recruits from the warmest climates have been here on our coldest days of the year. Rashad Wagu's first experience with snow was here. He was stuck 3 days at the airport. I had to drive him to Chicago to get him out of Madison, and he still committed inside to come be a Badger. Malik Reed, who's on his way, was here on the polar vortex.
we all want to
leave from Arizona. He's here from Arizona, and he's stuck and committed and signed and came through. So cold is who we are. When it's cold, it's cold. We talk about limited skin exposure. So we put a coat on them, a scully on them. We make sure the guys understand, hey, if you got a scooter, you're going to get a helmet. You know, we talk about things that doesn't make being outside so terrible.
So that phrase that our players are our best recruiters gets used a lot. So it seems like that's a dual purpose, right? Like it's a good way for the recruits to find out the real story sort of away from all the adults in the room, but it's also a way, I think, for you guys to get good feedback on, would this guy fit here?
For sure. And Coach Chris is the best at it. He's going to find out who's hosted him. He's going to bring him in his office and ask him, how was he? What'd you think about him? Did you like him? And if any of our guys ever say no, we will stop recruiting that kid. What's really best about it is our best players are our best recruiters.
I was just going to ask you that. Who are the best recruiters on the team?
Our best recruiters would be Jonathan Taylor, Chris Orr, Zach Bond. The ones who are really good football players on the field are really good recruiters. They want to tell their story. They're nice and genuine with the kids that come on campus. They tell them what's real. Graham Mertz is a great recruiter. Wants to do it. Wants to be involved.
That's got to be powerful for the kids, doesn't it? That you're not putting them with the backup punter. You know, you're saying, hey, Peel, we're an open book.
Absolutely. And those guys want to do it. We have to be careful not to wear them out because they have a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, Brian Mason's over here making them do things every day of the week.
Right. So we try to be careful about it. But giving them a great meal and taking them out and hanging out with them is always a good.
No, but that's real, though. Like you talk about Jalen Berger, you know, referenced that. His conversation in the locker room on his visit with Jonathan Taylor was a real part of why he wanted to come here.
Absolutely, and that was set up intentionally.
There's a method there.
There was a method to that. And having the New Jersey connection. But Jalen had a real affinity for Jonathan Taylor. And if to get to know him, he lights up after you spend some time with him. But prior to coming from New Jersey and growing up in Newark like I did, he's not far from the neighborhood I grew up in. So I kind of know the personalities of kids from those areas. You're really closed off until you get to know people. It's not like a warm and friendly, outward, robust type of deal. And so it could be misconstrued as antisocial.
Sure.
But he's far from it. One of the and we saw that in his – this. I saw Instagram, but I wasn't on. So, I mean, he had dance contest challenges on Instagram versus other teammates and other schools. That says a lot about a kid's personality. You don't put that kind of stuff out if you're a closed-off kid.
Yeah.
So you got to give them a chance to let their personality shine as they get to know you. And Jonathan and him lit up. I mean, they were best friends during their time on campus.
Football-wise, what makes Jalen Berger special? Because this is a big get for us as a program. It fills some needs, but also he might be another great New Jersey back.
I think being a football junkie, he really grinds, works, trains, and then he has multiple position versatility. He could come in here and play wide receiver for us right now. So the ability to...
Sounds like Wildcat to me.
Well, the ability to throw the ball to him out of the backfield too changes a little bit of our landscape. So you just can't load the box and expect to just stop the run with a kid like that. He can do multiple things like Jonathan became at the end of his career.
So who else are you excited about out of this group?
I like some of the guys on campus now. Nick Herbig, he's a gritty, fiery, he'll fight you. I like that.
Another guy who wasn't scared off by the cold coming out of Hawaii.
Again, coming out of Hawaii.
Yeah, what's his recruiting story? I mean, how do you land a kid from Hawaii? How do you even find a kid from Hawaii?
I think he was initially brought to the table by Coach Brechtefield,
who's
from Hawaii. And then Coach April liked him a lot. And then when we touched base and the kid was responsive, we just knew we just had to get him here and spend the time with him. And getting him here, he got here for a summer official visit. We got to hang out at the lakes, one of the lakes.
Yeah.
Spend the time here in the city, and they loved it. And his brother plays for the Eagles with TJ Edwards. So that connection is kind of further confirmed that this could be a good place for
TJ. Would be a good ambassador for us. I'm sure he was a good recruiter when he was on campus.
And I think Nick's story is kind of an illustration, too, of just how much goes into this and how the cycle never stops, because Badgers play in the Big Ten championship game, lose the game, fortunately. But then hours later, Paul Christ and Bobby April, and I think Coach Noakes was with them, too, are on a plane headed to Hawaii.
Yes. Yeah. going to see him, to spend the time with him. Coach does not miss a home or contact visit with any of our committed and signed guys. Even after they sign, he still makes that home visit to the kids because that's important to him to connect with those families.
All right, Nick Herbig will fight people. We like that. Okay, what else we got? Who else we want to highlight out of this class?
My dark horse would be Cade McDonald. Cade.
Defensive end from Wisconsin.
Yes.
Hudson High School, all right.
Yes. He did it the old-fashioned way. He came to camp and beat up everybody in camp. I mean, when I say we had our top guys in camp, the top guys in the state were in camp, and we had some visitors from the borders. And he came to camp, and we wore him out. Every rep, he battled, scrapped, fought, did it the old-fashioned way. And for Wisconsin, that is what we want. We want a guy to come in here and earn it in camp. Mm-hmm. And he did. I mean, he challenged Jack Nelson. He challenged Trey Wettig. There were other guys in that camp that we wanted to step up to scholarship. We were trying to make a decision about some other kids, and he, out of nowhere, came and earned it the old-fashioned way.
Man, that sounds like the Tyler Biotish story there, how his journey started earning it out of camp, and that one worked out pretty well.
Okay, who else? Who else we got?
They're not hard. I like Caden Johnson. I think he brings a different –
6'4 linebacker from Minneapolis area. Yep.
A lot of speed and twitch from the edge that he walks on campus having.
Like a Zach Bond kind of profile a little bit?
Zach Bond, he's bigger than Zach.
Okay.
Right now. So challenge would be his body development because he's a basketball player, but he's naturally gifted. Zach learned to pass rush because he came in as a quarterback out of high school. Caden's actually playing a position in high school.
He just played basketball against the two recruits that we've got for the men's basketball team playing. They played La Crosse Central in a game recently. Yeah, yeah. I saw some highlights. He was dropping guys.
Really good basketball player.
Yeah, don't let Greg see those highlights.
Really good player.
We need him over here for football.
There's two offensive linemen get a lot of headlines in this class. Where are they in the lineage of recruits we've had here?
They're the real deal. I tell you, between Trey.
People can't see his smile, but he lit up talking about these guys.
I tell you, Jack could play defensive line. I mean, Jack could literally has position versatility on either side. The bend and flexibility of a big man like him and his ability to run and play from whistle to whistle. I mean, he was one of those scrappers in camp. He was a committed kid, offered kid. We knew he was coming because dad played here. So we kind of had a really good feeling about him, but he did not hesitate in camp to participate in everything that he could. He did offensive line, defensive line, and dad kind of gave us a like, all right, I breed defense. I breed offensive linemen. All right, enough of this defensive line stuff. But he was doing so well, and we were just enjoying his performance. So, but I like Jack. I like his demeanor. I like the way he carries himself. We've had a lot of opportunities because they've been to a bunch of games over the years to get to know him a lot better as a kid.
Yeah, Stoughton area. I mean, that's just down the road.
Just watching him grow up is fantastic. I think he's going to be one of the better offensive linemen that have come through here. And that's saying something.
Yeah, no kidding. Trey Wedding, that guy is a man child. 6'7", 301 out of high school is unbelievable.
301 might be an understatement right now. I was talking to Coach Rudolph the other day, and he's like, this is the leanest 340-pound kid that I've ever seen. So we're holy already cow. Talking about making sure his nutrition stays on par so he didn't just blow up. But he's legitimately has the frame and the athleticism to play at almost 400 pounds.
Holy smokes.
And that's scary.
So is this class a good representation of what the blueprint is here? I mean, you got seven kids out of the state. You got some top flight O-linemen from Wisconsin. But then what do we count up, 13 states?
Yeah, this roster of recruits is here. 13, seven Wisconsin kids, so locking down the borders, which is vital for this program. We know that, but recruiting is not regional anymore.
And intentional.
Why do you say that?
Again, a method.
Yeah, why do you say that?
When I landed here February 2017, after spring evaluations, one of the first things Coach Chris said, well, tell me what you think. And I said, they're all starting to look alike. And that wasn't a bad thing. But it was, this is a national program that likes to be very humble and understated. So we won't tell our story outside of, we'll attack the state because we are fighters and we don't want anybody coming in here taking anything from us in state. But we weren't aggressive about going into other states and taking their kids to add to our rosters. So without making a lot of noise about it, it's part of what we do. Part of what we do is saying, we're a national program. You don't know it. Let us tell you about us. Let us show you the history of success. Let us show you what the experience was like for a lot of the players that have come through here and share that with you and say, now make a decision what you want to be a part of. And so we're telling that story more through the intentional communications through Brian has been fantastic helping us put out social media.
Fantastic might be a little strong.
No, it's been.
I mean, he's been okay. He's been all right.
Hey, let him go.
From where I started, it's fantastic.
Expectations have been low.
But, I mean, it gave us intentional communication. It gave us a way to tell the story, to share stuff about people, this place and people that others outside of here normally would not have gotten.
Yeah.
We talked a lot. Coach is not about doing things that's good for recruiting. He's about doing things that's good for the kids in the locker room, which in turn is good for recruiting. So a lot of the changes and adjustments, even bringing on services where the current players get access to their content quicker, Because they all want to see pictures of themselves. They all want to see highlights of themselves. And I'm sure they used to wear AFCOM out about it. And now they have access to it. Now they have access to it relatively quickly.
And personal brand, right?
Yes. And it's a movement at other places, but it's something that we've adopted without making a big deal.
Right.
It's not like we're not flying a banner for personal branding and that kind of stuff. But it's something that they can do easily now as they start to pull this stuff into their social spaces.
Yeah, it goes back to that idea. There's nobody better to tell what's going on here and what we're about than the guys that are in it right now.
Yeah.
So,
I want to list off the states because people probably don't realize. So this is what Wisconsin's 2020 recruiting class is made up of. In addition to Wisconsin, Illinois, New Jersey, North Carolina, Hawaii, Minnesota, Connecticut, Colorado, Arizona, Tennessee, Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania. So when we talk about it's not being regional, that's all corners of the United States. We just need to start going international is what's next.
Yeah, we need some help with admissions, getting some of those.
Like an Australian kicker, like an Aussie rules kicker. Yeah, maybe down there we go.
That'd be cool. We get some different language in there now that Hoff's gone. We get somebody speaking some different language.
That's right.
We've
done. Yeah, we had Hoff.
Man, I think it's such a qualitative process, right? Like it's so personalized and everything is so tailored to the individual kid. My question is, since you're recruiting all corners, that's a lot of high school football players. Like from a number standpoint, how do you start cutting through those numbers and how do you ID these guys to start with? Because it's got to start with film and it's got to start with football before we get into this, how do they fit and all the stuff that ends up being the most important stuff.
We're in the elimination business in the recruiting office. We'll start a database. It relatively has about, on average a year, roughly 3,500 to 4,000 kids in it. And it's not unique. I mean, a lot of the people use similar services, right? And then we pare it down based on our, what we call our footprint, that 5 to 6 hour driving radius from campus is where we like to start. From there, we'll do sorting. We've created a filter that allows a student task force to actually go through and identify things that match what we're looking for. And then those are shared with the recruiting office, and Warren and Jensen actually have, one has offense, one has defense.
Jensen Gebhardt and former Badger Warren Herring, your guys that are on your staff.
Yeah, so Warren being a former defensive lineman here, we've given a defense as a defensive analyst, and Jensen being a former quarterback is an offensive analyst. So we break it up that way so we can get at least a separation of evaluation. The intent there was if I had them looking at all positions, they'd miss kids because it's sort of what coaches go through. Oh, he was pretty good. But unless you've seen 200 of them, you really don't know where they matter, where they fall.
Sure.
So now I have people who are responsible for specific sides of the balls, and they are position experts because they see more of them and they spend time with the position coach to determine what they want.
Oh, yeah.
So now we pare it down to, first of all, here are the best ones we've been able to find. From these, which ones do you like? And all we want is a thumbs up and a thumbs down. Either you like them or you don't like them. If you like them, it comes back to us, and we continue the vetting.
There's a lot of pressure on that initial, on Jensen and Warren there, and you to put the right pool in front of the coaches. Because
absolutely.
If you miss guys, then we never even have a chance at them.
That's right. And the challenge there is our mantra is we will not put a kid in front of a coach if we don't have his transcript. So we have to make sure he's academically viable.
Yeah.
First.
Sure.
So after we've done the assessment that we like them enough to show, and we've gotten transcripts in to determine whether they could make it here academically or not, then we take them upstairs. So that question is not asked. So we eliminated the question of,
sure,
is he a student or not?
A real question here. So people love recruiting. Like fans love to hear what's next. Do you get tired talking about it? Like, not internally when you're working, but when you go out and you're out at a restaurant or you go out a social outing and people are like, hey, tell me about this kid and I got this kid and this kid.
They don't bother me. I don't get tired of talking about it because I don't talk about it.
Under the radar. Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. And it's nice. It's really, it's refreshing when people actually know, when they do know that there are kids on the radar that have value and could add value to the program. The challenge that we have in recruiting is all of the people who think they have kids who can play here because they've played somewhere.
Sure.
And that's the hard part. A lot of alumni, a lot of fan support. We get a lot. I get a lot of emails, get emails every day about kids who want to come to, and we can't take them all. I mean,
can't miss prospect. Right. You got emails that say that in the lead, I bet, huh?
Yeah, but you think about it. You take one quarterback a year, right? There are situations where you just don't have the numbers to bring them in. And, you know, you don't want people to think you're turned off, but we're still looking for that best prospect to match the program and fit where we are.
All right, so the 2020 class finished up here. Most of it done in the early signing period, which – is the signing period for us usually, but finished it up. All right, you're looking at you're working on 21s. You've already had a junior day here last weekend. How far out are you working now? Are you working on 22, 23? Does it? I mean, we know it never stops.
We're on 23s, and it's sad to say, but we're actually vetting 23s. The coaches that just came off the road seeing our 20 class obviously get list of guys or next up guys from the coaches that they go see. And then we were literally this morning, we're watching 23s. We're about halfway committed for 21 right now. So we only have about 10 to 12 spots left for that class.
Shaping up to be another good one.
That's a slow play, man. You got to be patient because these guys aren't even going to campus for 3 years.
Right.
So you're like, you're shaping future that you can't, I can't even see next week, let alone 3 years. Are you fiscally conservative too? Like you just like slow play. I'm just, my money's just going to rise over the years. I'm not.
I'm a little more aggressive. Yeah. And part of it is by design. It's our coaches. Coach Chris he's about the current roster. And he understands the value and importance of recruiting. But again, he feels like the best recruiting is taking care of the current roster.
Sure.
So a lot of those preserving those 22s and 23s, they stay downstairs and, you know, we keep those files current and hot. So when that time comes, it's just a switch. So it's not like the class ends and now we start over.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a class ends and we heat up what was in the oven. You know what I mean? We got some stuff in the refrigerator and now we get to warm it up. But so when the class ends and that dish is cooked, we're pulling one out and trying to get it room temperature.
Now you're talking food. Now you got me wondering where you take these guys on visits. Can we talk about this? I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the local Madison hotspots that close the deal?
Our big hit has been Tornado Room.
Oh, well, obviously.
Kids love steak. Yeah. Most love steak. We had a few come in that were big pasta and Italian foodies. So Naples 15 was big for us. I don't want to be. I'm plugging people. But they've been good to us. I mean, they treat us well. They give the people a good experience.
The team goes to Samba a lot, don't they?
Team goes to Samba for
Thanksgiving.
Like, yep.
Thanksgiving.
Yep.
We don't use them for recruiting because the variety a lot of the kids haven't experienced. So we're filling them up. We get people food wasted on visits. So they leave here heavy, food drunk, and they probably will say yes to most things we ask them. We've had a great partnership with the Edgewater Hotel. And their chefs there have done a great job having a meal there. But I tell you, the hidden gem, Coach Chris' house.
Yeah?
We go to Coach Chris' house on Saturday night.
He's like he's on the grill, like grilling
no,
up.
No, we'll have some food catered in, but okay. The experience out there, they get to see the coaches in their natural habitat.
Sure.
Their families are there. They can see how coaches interact with each other. They can see the kinship. They can see the real experience of how the people feel about each other at his house. That has been probably the best addition to the recruiting process that we've had on official visits.
Man, because I think about adding those summer visits, and I'm thinking, you know, the lakes and the terrace and all that, but it's Saturday night at Coach's house.
Night at Coach's house. Wow. It's authentic. It's really cool. Typically, we'll have them. We want them to experience town, so the square, State Street, things like that. We've added city tour to it so they actually can see the surroundings off of campus and understand where they can go. And, you know, guys want to know where they can get the haircut, where can they go to church, things like that.
I got a question. Okay, so you got a kid from Hawaii coming in, or you got a kid, let's say, from North Carolina. What do you think they think Madison is like before they get here?
They think what I thought.
Okay, so
which is?
I just thought it was a bunch of farmland.
Yeah, there's cows everywhere.
Cows and cornfields. And we are very intentional about bringing them up John Nolan from the airport.
Yeah. Well, it's the campus is beautiful. Super urban. I think that's got to surprise people.
Blew me away. So, and it blows people away. The inner city kids, because I already know. And mom, I know what they were thinking.
Yeah.
So I intentionally bring them away where they go, ooh, didn't expect this.
Yeah.
And then I go, gotcha.
All right, you guys have gotten plenty of them the last 3 years you've been here.
You probably missed about 15 text messages and 35 DMs.
That phone won't stop ringing. Yeah, so
just six.
We'll let you get out of here, man. Saeed, thanks for
appreciate your time, man. Keep killing
for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Talking recruiting is such a slow play because like these names that Saeed tells us about and like it gets me excited about, we may not really see that produced for a couple of years. It's like minor league baseball products, like yeah. Trying to get excited about a minor league baseball guy who we may not even hear from for a few years.
Right. As much as I said in the leading into the interview that some of these guys might have a chance to make an impact, that's pretty rare.
Right.
That, I mean, and ideally if your roster is set up well, then you're not asking them to do that.
Big thanks to Saeed for coming on the podcast. Big thanks to you for listening to it. Tell your friends. Tell your friends if you like this podcast. We can always use more listeners. Also want to reemphasize the PSA. If you're coming to the basketball game on Sunday against Ohio State, stick around for the halftime ceremony to recognize that team. Get in your seats early because there's a little bit of a little video feature too. And then also stand up at tip-off. Let's get that Dick Bennett tradition back in the building. For next week's podcast, we're going to try and run down a couple of the heroes from that 2000 run and have a conversation about them, get some story hour with some of the guys from that. So hopefully we can get that for you next week. That'll be a lot of fun. Brian, what else we got going on?
Wednesday was also National Girls and Women in Sports Day. Want to give a shout out to, what was the number? I think 450 female student athletes at Wisconsin from Alicia Monson and Beta Nelson and all of these really impactful women that we have on our teams. Good day to celebrate them. I actually took my daughter to her first women's hockey game last week.
Yeah, and love it.
Oh, I had a great time. And you want to talk about making an impact on a young kid and exposing her to like what girls and women can do in sports. It was a pretty cool.
LeBron Arena is an awesome venue. The size is perfect for women's hockey. It's always packed. We always win.
Yeah, it's 11-1 in that game.
So yes, that'll make you a fan.
I had to explain to the 5-year-old that they're not always going to go that way.
Shouts to all the female Badger athletes, the past alumni, a lot of them who are going to be competing in the Summer Olympics this summer. Can't wait to follow them this summer. And shouts to the future Badger women who will grace this podcast someday. Brian, let's get a win for Badger basketball this weekend, and then let's talk about it next week.
Unless we get fired.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Badgers. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your preferred podcast platform. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.